Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
WEEI Afternoons with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
I feel fairly confident that they will pull at least one move before or around Tuesday's cutdown day. It's not because Anthony Jennings is suddenly a hot commodity across the league or people want to take Kyle Duggar's contract. But the point is, I think they've got enough players at those positions where they're comfortable offloading any one of them. And you couldn't say that in past years where you were at the mercy of your own lack of talent and just kind of had to sit there and eat the injury or the bad contract or a guy who wasn't a scheme fit.
That was Andrew Callahan from the Boston Herald, a trusted source for Patriots information, for sure. WEEI Afternoons here, Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, Ted Johnson. I'm going to read a little bit more from Callahan. He writes, Patriots safety Kyle Duggar and outside linebacker Anthony Jennings are known to be available for trade with less than a week left until the NFL's 53-man roster deadline, according to league sources. The Patriots recently raised Duggar's name in talks with at least one team, while the front office has long been willing to take offers on him and Jennings, offers said. So to set the table on this, from Saturday, preseason action, Kyle Duggar played late into the game. And by late, I mean really late into the game. Anthony Jennings did as well, but showed up. Maybe his best pass rushing effort I've ever seen. Practice field, preseason game field, anything. Not really what he's known for. He's known as more of a edge setting run defender. But both of those guys, veteran players who were, Ted, as you've alluded to, kind of tied into the previous regime or regimes, are apparently available here. And then before we discuss this, one more update, which I don't know if this was just piggybacking off Andrew Callahan, who had it first, but Jordan Schultz tweeted out sources. Did you read Andrew Callahan? Was that your source? The Patriots have been open to trading safety Kyle Duggar, whose role has been reduced this summer. Duggar is still viewed as a talented, impactful player, and there are several teams where he'd be a much better scheme fit. The contract will complicate any deal, and one source said New England will likely need to eat money just to make it a conversation.
Yeah.
What was that, Fitzy? What was that?
That's just sort of like as in, can you believe they signed this guy to a four-year, $60 million deal, and a little over a year later, now they're looking to maybe have to eat some of that just to tell him, just to get a seventh-round pick probably and have him not play for you.
Now, to be fair, Terrell Williams spoke to the media on Monday, Tuesday. I'm losing track of days.
This week, it's fine.
Yeah, this week. And he said, sure, there's a role for Kyle Duggar, but it's like everybody. You have to earn your role. You're getting reps. We're working our way through that process. So he was, you know, not necessarily articulating that they're giving up on Kyle Duggar, but, you know, I trust Andrew Callahan's reporting that they are pretty much giving up on Kyle Duggar. Ted, do you think he is a guy that could be traded? Do you think, you know, with the contract as part of the conversation, do you think there's any way?
I don't. Not with the contract. I don't. I think teams are going to see, okay, the Patriots want to trade him. We'll just wait till he's cut.
Right.
I mean, that's how it works. I mean, $15 million cap hit that Kyle Duggar brings. And so, you know, I again, it's kind of like there's a lot of contracts where you kind of went, huh? You know, you looked at like, wait, what? You extended Josh Uche last year. You extended, did they extend Anthony Jennings too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they did. It's like, oof, like that's such a Belichickian, you know, specific role.
Yeah.
Not sexy. And so it just didn't make sense. I just don't think anybody's going to want to pay Kyle Duggar what he's scheduled to make. I mean, he's got a $15 million cap hit right now. And he's probably, you know, valued at more like a $4 to $6 million a year guy.
Where could we speculate that he may be a better scheme fit or who may show interest in him that wouldn't come back to not haunt the Patriots, but so they wouldn't have to see him twice a year?
I don't think there's anybody. I mean, it's Kyle Duggar's game. Does it scare you? Like where you would be like, has he shown flashes other than early in his career? I mean, in the last few years, I haven't seen anything where I go, that's a guy that you can't live without.
No.
It is interesting because if you listen to how Vrabel talks about, there is a player that is a safety on this defense that has been here from the prior regime that he loves, and that's Jabril Peppers.
Mm-hmm.
Loves Jabril Peppers. And probably it's because I just think there's a dog in him. I think he comes every day. Football means a lot to him. I've never gotten the sense watching Kyle Duggar. Like, I don't see him get excited. I don't see him, kind of celebrating with his teammates. Those are all signs that tell me he's invested in his team and what's going on. That position is a leadership position. And when I don't see him, if you're going to miss tackles, you better bring something else to the table, some leadership. And I don't even see him doing that.
Football Talk on WEEI is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Yes, Fitzy.
The way Vrabel talks, it was me. The way Vrabel talks about Duggar, it's almost as if he's like going into a second year.
Right.
I mean, he's going into mm-hmm. a sixth year.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, he's got to learn this, do this. And he's got to learn to do that. It's like, bro, he's a six-year NFL vet.
He's a $15 million a year player.
And so that, to me, is
super
almost
overpaid.
Like, just, you know, coach coming over and patting me on my head. Like, get away, man. Like, and so, I don't know. And I was watching the game. I didn't get the sense. I mean, there's guys can react different ways. You know, you don't put me into the you know, I'm with the twos. I'm going to show you that you're making a mistake, or I'm going to just show you that I want the hell out of here. And it wasn't like he played in a way that he wanted the hell out of there, but it didn't look like a guy that was fighting for his tooth and nail to keep his job.
So
you think
he's
confused, though, that he came into the season expecting to be a leader, and then all of a sudden now he's on the chopping block?
Well, I mean, right there, that word. What was that word you said? He came into
expecting
the season
expecting.
And I believe that
it goes with entitlement.
Entitlement and expectation go together, and that's what Vrabel's trying to get rid of. And it is interesting that you have two guys that are bigger box safety types, not free safety or coverage guys, in Peppers and Duggar, and one does seem to have found a way to fit, you know, impress the new regime, carve out a secure role for himself. And the other guy seems to have just faded down the depth chart with every lost opportunity. I will say there were a couple. He had at least one blitz off the edge in the preseason game, made a nice tackle for a loss there off the right side. So every once in a while you do see the athleticism. Because I know McCourty used to rave about him. McCourty used to rave, which also I think helped his ass out.
He's a good athlete, though.
He is athletic. So you do want more, expect more, and certainly for the salary, need more.
They'd probably switch contracts if they could with Jabril Peppers and Kyle Duggar, because Jabril's scheduled to make $6.5 million this year.
Yeah.
So and they love them some Jabril Peppers.
So have we reached the point where we're gonna be almost now, not that he's a surprise cut, that he's a surprise still here come Wednesday?
No. What else are they gonna do? So I would rather keep him for depth than I would cut him and get nothing for him.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah, I mean,
I agree.
I've said for a while now, I think the only thing that's keeping him on this team is his cap number, is his dead cap number. I think if he were, you know, either if he's making less money, then you probably look at him differently. Or if the dead cap was less and you could just get rid of him free and clear. But to have, I think it's $14 million as a dead cap number, like, that's a lot of money to eat up. And I know they have it. They obviously have $59 million or whatever in cap space.
I mean, if I'm Kyle Duggar, I don't know. Am I being an a-hole behind the scenes and I'm not being a good teammate? Am I forcing their hand to cut me? Because if you're not going to start me, just cut me so I can go somewhere else. You almost got to – if he's being a good teammate, I would think, you know, but he isn't playing the way you want, I'd still think he's more serviceable than anybody you're going to get as a backup. He's just a highly paid backup.
Yeah, I don't believe I've ever heard indication, whispers, rumors that he's a problem behind the scenes, that he's a bad guy.
Never, not once.
He kind of just blends in, good or bad. You can take that how you want. For $58 million.
For $15 million a year, that's bad.
Right, but not enough to send him packing because he's being
quiet.
A jack.
Yeah. Like, he's a bit of a, I won't say demure, but he's kind of like a soft, like, you'd almost want to say, like, he's the definition of, you know, speak softly and carry a big stick, or, you know, deliver a big hit, but
Yeah, but where's the
misses
well,
in coverage?
Well, he swings it, but misses a lot of times.
Right.
He's had some highlights. Like, there was that great pick of Derek Carr in the infamous Jacoby Myers game, December 18th, 2022.
I would paint that differently. I think that was one of the worst passes I've ever
Okay, you can paint it however you wish. He still picked off the pass and took it to the six-point house.
Threw it right to him, and because it was on the goal line, there was nobody to stop him. Right. And he was, I honestly, I've said for years, when he was a free agent, I would not have re-signed him. I just didn't understand what value he brought.
They had no talent. There was a panic signing.
Yeah, but that's bad. When you panic,
I know,
you waste money, and then you turn a current bad into a future bad. Right now, you're dealing with this issue down the road.
This old regime, the old regime had a weird way of looking at their own players, though.
Well, but also Elliott Wolf was in there.
Excuse me. Yeah,
I feel
but
I wonder.
He was part of Bill. You don't think Bill was telling him what to do?
No, but last year Bill was gone when they signed the contract. I wonder what Ryan Cowden and Bill Belichick and Mike Vrabel say. Like, hey, Elliott, can you remind us again, why is he making $58 million? What was the logic? But seriously, like, we're not just busting your balls, Elliott. Like, what was the value?
I think probably because Elliott's like, I don't know how to go out and get another one. How do I go out and get a better safety? You know, that means I got to do more work, or, you know, it's like if I pay him all this money, then it looks like he's worth it, at least by the contract that I signed him to.
I guess. Yeah, I've never understood it, and it seems like his lack of playmaking. And you still get the whispers. You still get plenty. There's some in the media, others that put he had an ankle injury, and then he had ankle surgery, and he's been coming back from ankle. And, okay, that's
played
a lot
of games at the end of last year after the ankle injury.
Yep.
So, and then you have all offseason. So that's not an issue anymore, please. Stop.
And the other thing is, if he's so much returning from an ankle injury, does it hurt your ankle less when they put you on second and third team? He's still getting plenty of reps. It's not like they're really monitoring his reps. They're just asking him to take those reps
lesser
quality. So his
ankle's not an issue.
No, his ankle's not an issue.
Yeah.
The quality of play and the role and the upside and the value and the fit, those are all issues. So, yeah, I would love to trade him. I just don't see how. The only way I could see it is one of those, this is disrespectful, but like trash for trash trades. Somebody else has an overpaid player at a position. Maybe you need a little more depth. Let's just say there's an overpaid tackle. They admit they're not that good, but you want depth at tackle, so you're willing to take on basically a $14 million cap hit, and you'll send them your $14 million cap hit.
Just, you got to find the right partner for that.
Yeah, and those are tough to do, and that's what Ryan Cowden was talking about, kind of marrying those needs and values and slots and everything up. 617-779-7937. Talking about trades, we might as well talk about what Fitzy wanted to talk about earlier. The big name trades are still out there. We're seeing all these dream trades, guys that aren't practicing, and it is certainly feeling more and more that at least one of them, maybe a certain Bengals pass rusher, will not be a Bengals pass rusher for long. So big trade targets would be trade targets. And oh, Elliott Wolf said yes, they would indeed trade a first round pick for the right guy. Will they? Could they? Should they? That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons. With Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
You can't get a deal done if you're not even talking. And the two sides haven't had any negotiations since late March or early April. And it sounds like at this point it's personal. It sounds like each side is dug in. The Cowboys have come out and said what they said publicly at the start of training camp, which Micah didn't like. Micah came out and asked to be traded, said he was ready to move on from Dallas, which I'm sure they didn't like. And right now, both sides seem to be angry.
Adam Schefter, ESPN, detailing one of the three high-profile contract standoffs involving Pro Bowl or All-Pro caliber players right now in the NFL as we head toward the regular season and get closer and closer. My first prediction before we delve into the three topics is at least one of these guys will be hurt most of the year. I feel like these long contract disputes generally lead to injuries and guys just have down seasons, miss like a month here, a month there. So that's Micah Parsons, who for his part is with the Cowboys and going to meetings but not doing anything physical. He's looking, obviously, for, I don't know, $150 million or to become the highest paid non-quarterback in the history of the game following the offseason of Max Crosby, Myles Garrett, TJ Watt, all these guys. So you got Micah Parsons on the table. Then in Cincinnati, you got Trey Hendrickson, who he told ESPN's Laura Rutledge before the Washington-Cincinnati preseason game that they're actually close on the years and the total money. It's just the guaranteed money where they dispute things. Apparently, he wants multiple years of guaranteed money, even made some sort of a comment that he wants to be able to tell his wife where they're going to be playing for the next few years. That kind of deal for Trey Hendrickson. Mm. And then lastly, we have Terry McLaurin, who we did not see when the Commanders were up here with the Patriots in joint practices. He, you know, there's more rumblings out there that he, as a 30-something wide receiver, is the least likely to get the big money that he is asking for because of the position, the nature of the position, the age, everything that goes into it. So my first question is, do we believe any or all of these guys are going to remain with their current teams, are going to end up being traded? Like, I know we're all playing fantasy football type talk radio trade ideas in our minds, but is there a chance they all just re-sign with their current teams, or do we actually think one of these guys will be on the move?
I think one of them gets moved. Probably two out of three. I think the Bengals have to re-sign Trey Hendrickson. Don't, even though they gave Joe Burrow everything he wanted by re-signing your guy, T. Higgins, and ultimately throwing the bag at Ja'Marr Chase, are you going to go into the season with that defense and take away the best defensive player and say, all right, Joe, go get him, we're committed?
Well, the problem was they were terrible last year with him. So they might be able to talk themselves into, we can suck with him, we can suck without him.
I think that's part of it, and I think that is a tone-deaf owner.
Yes.
I think Mike Brown doesn't care what anybody says about how he runs his organization.
Except maybe Joe Burrow. That might be the one person that might have some influence. And I do wonder how Joe Burrow would react. He's a pretty passionate, open guy, and if he's ticked off, he'll probably
he cares more about his receivers getting paid though too.
Well, you know? Yeah, he's a smart guy.
Yeah,
smart guy.
It's why do I always feel like most of the time these guys always get they're with the money.
Yeah,
they
that's
want.
How it feels.
Like, I would say I feel like all three of them are going to eventually get what they want.
Ayuk a year ago, oh, the Patriots are going to trade for him. Or the Patriots offer, he re-signed with the 49ers. Or, you know, CeeDee Lamb. Feels like the Cowboys do this every year.
Every single year, Andy, they do this. Real quick, do you guys know what everybody's talking about? And there's the Cowboys. I'm so tired of hearing how good they're going to be every year. You know what their win total is in Vegas?
How about 8.5?
Okay. Well, Fitzy, you know?
I would go 7.5.
7.5? It's 7.5. Do you know who has shorter odds to get to the Super Bowl over the Patriots, who have 8.5 win total?
So the Cowboys?
The Cowboys. It's square. I don't know. You know, betting is not my thing, but they have a shorter odds of making the Super Bowl than the Patriots. Yet they are their win total is one game less than the Patriots. I would bet the under for the Cowboys. I think they're going to be a glorious disaster this year.
A glorious disaster.
Oh my! I think Brian Schottenheimer. He's come in with all his new age kind of, you know, touchy-feely kind of stuff, and I think it's going to blow up in their face. It's
the backward hat
thing.
Did you guys
see the rumor that was swirling around how much the Packers allegedly offered the Cowboys for Micah Parsons? It was 2 firsts, a second, and a fifth, and the Cowboys said, no thanks.
Wow. Yeah, that's I think you're talking multiple significant picks.
If that's true, like if it's true that you turn down 2 firsts and a second, and you don't pay Mike, I mean, you don't pay Micah Parsons, and he sucks his thumb hole, that's like a double whammy.
Yeah,
you know what? And old Jer, I think he just loves the attention, man.
I do too. That's why I think he ends up signing. I think there's a chance he plays in the freaking opener. Like they play him, he's up there, and boom, he's out there. You've run the numbers about how good their defense is when he's on the field as opposed to when he's not on the field, and the dramatic difference.
Huge difference.
He's also a star.
And Dallas is about stars.
And, you know, like that matters to Jerry maybe more than most.
No doubt.
Especially probably at this point in his life and his career. They just had they got a Netflix documentary or something they're running down there. I haven't really watched it, but
I mute every single one of those freaking clips.
But you know what I didn't like about it? There's something interesting about the way the Micah Parsons stuff is going down. Just real quick, they had casual conversations with Micah about his contract. And these casual conversations they have, they literally thought was the structure of a new deal.
Right.
And Micah was just like, nah, bro, like, no, you have to talk to my agent, and this is just talking to me about it casually every now and then in the off season while I'm, you know, on my way to the weight room, isn't putting a deal together.
Right.
That's such a Belichick thing, that's what Bill did.
Right. Well, that's old school. It's an older school bullying. We said it. Now you, oh, no, no backsies. Your agent wasn't here. That's not my fault. You said it. We talked about it. Because I think Jerry even talked about when he bought the team. I didn't have no contract. I had a handshake, and I told him the number and told him we'd figure out the details afterwards or something like that. Well, yeah, that's how guys get screwed half the time. Because the devil's in the details, as they say in the business world. But I think Micah Parsons is the least likely of this trio to go. I actually think Trey Hendrickson is the most likely to potentially go somewhere. Because I think if Mike Brown just decides, I agree. And then Terry McLaurin, I think, is in the middle. I can't imagine they're dumb enough that just when you get good and just when you have a quarterback to take away his number one receiver. But I can't tell you how many times I've thought teams wouldn't do dumb things and then they go out and do something that
and
I
everything
think is
I've
dumb.
Heard about Terry McLaurin, he's a great
guy.
Great teammate.
Everything. Everything. We've talked about it. He's had 5 1,000-yard seasons with 14 quarterbacks mixed in or 13 quarterbacks mixed in. Yeah. All the guy does is get open, catch the football, and almost doesn't even care who the guy throwing it is. Now you give him a franchise quarterback, a guy coming off one of the best rookie seasons in the history of the league, and you're going to trade that away over a little bit of money? I don't really understand it. So I don't think that'll happen. And I'm with you, Ted. It seems like every year all these guys, for the most part, end up recent. Like,
at least in Dallas.
Who was the last? Like, trying to think of that. Like, when you say that, who was the last one of these guys at this time? Not, you know, A.J. Brown at the draft or whatever.
Khalil Mack.
That was in August? That was a late arriving trade?
Yeah.
That was a while ago. Was that 5 years ago?
It was a while ago. He went for a haul.
So once every 8 years, one of these actually leads to something. So that tells you more often than not.
They stay.
They get the money that the team they're with is the one they stay with. Fitzy, so you can't have an offensive lineman. I think we've done this before, but I want to get an updated version based on training camp practices, preseason, whatever. If you could have one of the three, it would be?
An offense of these three?
Yes.
Yeah. Micah Parsons, hands down and forever. He's the best of the three players.
You?
That's what I said. And
be realistic.
I argued against myself. I forgot what I was.
Happens all the time to me.
I was saying to Fitzy about, you know, I forget what it was, but it was like they're never going to give up draft equity and then pay the guy in all this money.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm like, make a case for Micah Parsons. So to me, Micah Parsons, 30-year, is he 30? Yeah, he's 30.
Oh, no. No, he's younger.
Or he's 26. No, 26.
He's 26.
No, it.
That's why you're trading.
Hendrickson's 30. That's why I'm trading for Micah, because he's so young. And you know what?
He's in his prime.
Can we get a premier pass rusher here? Like, for the first time in 20 years?
Been a long time.
We've never had a premier pass rusher.
Yeah.
Like, I think it would be pretty good to have on this defense.
Be fun. My pick would be Terry McLaurin, because I'm taking into account a realistic trade. And I think you could probably trade a second-round pick and maybe a fifth-round pick in the future for Terry McLaurin. I don't think they're getting a first-round pick for him. And if I can do that and hand him $30 million to help my guy Mack out, I think
so. Everything's got to go right for Terry McLaurin to get the ball. Offensive line's got to execute. You got to call the right play. You got to get offensive.
Quick routes and just look at me.
Where Micah Parsons, just beat that guy. Just beat that guy. That's all you got to do on every play.
Yeah, but I got to give up 2 first-round picks to get him.
What do you think you have to give up to get Terry McLaurin?
Yeah, a second and a fifth. Yeah. I think the age and the position devalue.
Can they interest you in a nice, shiny, born in a veritably brand new Polk?
Yeah, I don't think they want anything to do with that. There are teams reportedly that may be sniffing
Steelers.
Around the Polks and the Bournes and all that.
Watch, he'll go to Pittsburgh and he'll be an All-Pro.
No, we will not.
I have no fear of that. Nope. Feel free to come get him. I'll drive him. We'll meet you halfway. I'll meet you in like New York somewhere. 617-779-7937. A lot of trade opportunities for the Patriots. Big fish, little fish. Are they going to do anything? Andrew Callahan seems to think they'll do something before Tuesday's cutdown. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, it's 5 o'clock. That means it's time for The Drive, and we get back to a little Sox talk.
Are you ready to dive into the story, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is a Thursday, and
And Red Sox back in action after a rare off day on a Wednesday. And it is a pivotal series for them. And you can talk about that with us all morning long and certainly tomorrow. Although the flex fraud is taking another flex day tomorrow. You know the one. The one who criticizes everybody else around here when they dare to take a day off.
Told you, when in Rome, do as the Romans do.
Oh, so I see.
I might as well take advantage of it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, you were all
That's
over.
Cap.
I don't know if it was Courtney or Shine.
It was
or,
me mostly.
You're all over everybody else. Then you called me a soft boss. Yep.
Classless.
And then here you are burning flex days like ganja.
Your mama says if you don't take advantage of it, you dummy.
Okay.
Let's all just right. remember this next year when we go through the same show and dance again. When right. people take vacation, you say, oh, whoa,
no,
whoa,
I'm jumping,
whoa, whoa.
And I'm then I say to you, and then I, well, next year nope. I'm taking off a whole week.
And then I said to you, it doesn't matter if you take it for a week or if you take random Tuesdays and Thursdays here and there. It's all the same.
Yeah. No, next year I'm taking off a whole
you should.
Week. I might even take 3 weeks whoa. In a row. Boom, boom,
whoa,
boom.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
You doing anything good?
Going to Charlotte.
Oh, North yeah. Carolina.
North Carolina.
Okay.
North Carolina.
Come on and raise up.
Yep. My wife got family down there, so we're going down there.
Charlotte. Yeah. Okay. You're heading right into the eye of Hurricane Ellen.
Well, Aaron. I mean, I looked
Aaron.
At- Aaron, I looked at the weather, and they said that it shouldn't be bad.
Hurricane Ellen treats her coworkers poorly.
Coming in and coming out, so.
Yes.
All I'm right. in and out. I'll be back on a Sunday.
Might be okay. a turbulent flight.
Right. Well, I'm hoping that all, we so are, the winds won't be bad.
We are without Wiggy tomorrow, but mm-hmm. Wiggy back on Monday, and we will be at Gillette Stadium with Mike Vrabel for that whole
show and dance.
That whole show and dance.
I got that right, right?
No.
Song and dance.
It's okay.
Song and dance.
Could be a show and a dance.
It
right.
Could be a show and dance,
yeah.
or it could be a song and
well,
dance.
Well, there are songs in a show. Show and dance.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Damn. I'll get one right one
yeah,
time.
Yeah, you will. Listen, why do you care?
No, I don't.
You're moving to some sort of a leafy suburb.
Yeah, I
which
am.
A lot of people are guessing correctly, I've noticed.
And I love, like, the people are so nice. But, yeah, like, the private DMs yesterday that are like, just tell me, I won't tell anyone. Yeah. I'm not. No, we're not doing that.
Why aren't you telling everybody?
Because there are weird people out there. I shouldn't be giving out where I'm living and all of that.
Okay.
I mean, I was accosted walking into the building this morning. Weirdo.
Oh, yeah. What happened? Was Mike the Can Man up there? Is he still up there?
I don't know. I spent several minutes trying to just, like, back into the door so that he didn't realize I was walking away. He's exactly as I would have thought.
Yeah,
he is.
Do you remember he came? Mike the Can Man was a guy that we discovered on the AAF show. He performed the national anthem at over 40 softball. That was his big thing.
Oh, okay.
And then he started to mathematically calculate how many shows I had done in my entire career, and then keep track of them.
Wow.
Which is an extraordinary mental feat.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen him. He did show up one time at Ernie's.
28 times.
For the Toys for Tots show.
Yeah, I remember
because you gave him my headsets that then I had to put back on the rest of the show. That smelled like a mix between cigar and the worst body odor you've ever smelled.
All right,
get him some Axe for Christmas this year.
All right. Shime, let's get right to it.
This is the Greg Hill Show. Time now for The Lead.
Great one, Shime, from Led Zeppelin. And with so much to love, you don't want to miss the Subaru of New England A Lot to Love event. It's going on right now. Find your authorized Subaru retailer at SubaruofNewEngland.com. Hey, Shime.
Man, it's like that's just works in perfect sync there. Whole lot of love into the Subaru Lot of Love event, you know.
Yes, well done, Shime.
Thanks. Every once in a while, I hit on something, Greg. It's very rare, though. Yesterday in the NFL, there were multiple trades. Nothing major, but there were multiple, including the Chiefs trading wide receiver Sky Moore to the 49ers, the Broncos trading wide receiver Devon Valet to the Saints for a fourth-round pick, which is still blowing my mind, and then a couple smaller moves as well. And I believe that over the next few days, maybe the next week or so, we will see the Patriots name incorporated in some of these moves. but people are going to be disappointed. I have a feeling that it won't be for a guy like Trey Hendrickson. It won't be for a guy like Terry McLaurin. It won't. It surely, at this point, I don't think, will be for a guy like Micah Parsons. And if it is, I'll be very surprised. But I just expect them to be actually on the sending end of these trades, including guys like Kyle Duggar. Like, I think he is a guy whose name you could see be traded very soon, probably as soon as tomorrow, honestly.
Well, it sounds like the two names that are out there are he and Anfernee Jennings.
Yep, those are the two names being shopped. I also wouldn't be shocked if one of these wide receivers names becomes available, the Kendrick Bournes, the Javon Bakers, those guys of the world, even if it's just like a sixth and seventh pick swap or a seventh round pick.
The stumbling block on Duggar, it seems like they are reporting, is the deal that Elliott Wolf gave him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they gave him a massive contract before last season, and the guy can't cover. Jabril Peppers is just an overall better player, and then Craig Woodson plays safety a totally different way than Kyle Duggar, and what you want from Kyle Duggar you can't get, and so he is kind of superfluous on this roster and expendable, and it's a contract that they can shed. And oh, by the way, that's just more money they have in their pockets, Greg, if they were to shed this contract. So I very much expect Kyle Duggar traded within the next week.
Can I just inform those that are watching the show on Twitch, and I truly appreciate it, you can watch this show every day on YouTube or Twitch if you choose to consume it that way, and it is brought to you on Twitch every day by Springer's Jewelers, and they are in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, tax-free Portsmouth, New Hampshire, if you need a diamond or a watch. You are watching behind. So there's somebody who is accusing me when it comes to air drumming of being off tempo and off beat and behind. There's a delay. So I was spot on when it came to hitting the John Bonham, Gonzo Bonham air drums in here. Like I was in Led Zeppelin. You're seeing it behind on the Twitch chat, just as a heads up. But
thank you for addressing that.
If you can, I don't understand why, if you're the New England Patriots and you can get Micah Parsons, or you can get Terry McLaurin. Like, I don't understand why you aren't getting them.
So I don't know. At this point, I don't know. Even though he's asked for a trade, I don't know that the Commanders want to trade Terry McLaurin at this point. Like, I think they still want him on the team, so they're trying to figure something out. With a guy like Trey Hendrickson, though, there's no excuse. There is clearly a massive rift between the Bengals and Trey Hendrickson. He is accessible. He is not showing up to camp. He is demanding trades. Like, he is not going to play. Brian Schottenheimer said yesterday he expects Micah Parsons to play in the season opener. Like, that to me does not indicate a guy who is readily available for trade.
That's what Schottenheimer said?
That's what Schottenheimer
said.
Did
he not hear his owner who goes, I don't think Micah Parsons is going to play week one. So I think Schottenheimer is somehow missing the message from the owner.
Well, I mean, he may end up having to play down there this year, but he's definitely gone afterwards.
I don't think he's going to play. Why would he even roll the dice to get on the field if you're Micah Parsons and get hurt?
Wiggy, the quote from Skybox Shoddy is, I feel good that Mike is going to be out there against the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, and the quote from Jerry Jones, the guy who owns the football team, was, it doesn't look good that, and there's not a good chance that we're going to see Micah Parsons in week
one. That's just dumb on his part. Like, you should figure something out.
So this is brilliant by Micah Parsons, though, because 2 weeks from today, it's the opener. The Eagles are raising the banner, one of the big rivals of the Cowboys in the NFC East. The Eagles are going to boat race the Dallas Cowboys.
Yes, they are.
If Micah Parsons isn't playing in that game, guess what the announcers are going to spend the entire night talking about where the defense of the Cowboys gets gashed? He will have so much more leverage on Friday morning than he did on Wednesday.
Right. And if you're his agent, that's what you should be telling him. Do not play. Do not play.
I mean, that game's going to have like 40 million viewers.
On Snapchat or
it's
YouTube
on WhatsApp.
Or what? Okay. I want to watch that Friday night Chiefs game, but I got to figure out YouTube.
That's very simple.
Is it easy?
As a YouTube guy, it is very simple.
I just need either you or Lindsay to help me set it up. If you could come over at about 6:30,
I'd be happy.
Do you have to be a YouTube subscriber?
Not for this one, no.
Oh, okay.
That baby's free. All right, we're gonna take a break. We'll get to the rest of the leads coming up next.
So we will be checking in here, as we typically do on a Patriots Monday, with Patriots tight end Hunter Henry. He's brought to you by Drains by James, Eastern Mass's top provider of drain and sewer cleaning and repair, and by Verizon, the New England Patriots, powered by Verizon 5G. Hunter Henry, Patriots tight end, thanks so much for joining us here, day one of the Jimmy Fund Telethon. We appreciate it.
Hey, guys.
We saw some action this weekend in Minnesota. Not a lot of extended run for the starters. I know you've been limited as well. How are you feeling getting ready to go into week one just a couple of weeks away?
Feeling good, man. Feeling good. Taking it day by day. And, you know, we're just trying to go out there, execute, get better every day, and feel like we're coming together. And so it's been good.
You know, you've been here for a few years now, and it's now three different head coaches. It's I think I've lost track of the offensive coordinators that you've had. So how is everything coming together at this point? A lot of new faces in the building, not just in the huddle with you, but also just the guys in charge.
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, obviously there is a lot of turnover, a lot of new guys, not new faces, but that's what you get every year in a way in this league. I mean, every year is its own year. And you know, Braves has brought a great energy. Josh obviously brings a great energy in our room, and feel like guys are thriving off that. We're getting better. We're coming together. Drake's doing a great job taking it day by day, and like I said, it's been good. It's been fun. I think last week was good for us. Joint practices the last three have been really, really good for us, and challenging, but also getting us better. So makes me excited.
You mentioned the energy that Vrabel brings. Aside from that, what differences have you seen with the new coaching staff this year compared to Mayo and the Belichick staffs previously?
Yeah, I'm not going to compare anybody. You know, I'm just – Braves has been great. He's been a joy to be around, brings a lot of energy, accountability. Obviously, he was a player at a high level in this league, and so it's cool to be able to – talk about things with him in that aspect too, and you know, just have a ton of respect for him and what he's been able to do so far, and excited to go out there and compete and fight for him.
Is there a right number of preseason games in your mind? Obviously it was four for such a long time, that's been trimmed down to three, and yet you still see around the league, you know, both of your opponents really didn't play anybody of starters, I should say, in the first couple of weeks. Would you like to see it even go down to two, or do you think this is the right number?
I don't know, man. I don't have all the answers on that, man. I'm just, you know, going out there trying to get better every day. I don't know. I think we're probably at a good spot with three. You know, you wouldn't want to diminish too much just for the guys that are obviously going out there and really. I mean, there's a lot of guys fighting for jobs, man. Obviously, practice is still very, very important because you know you got to show it every single day. But these games are huge, man, because every team's watching. So I feel like I wouldn't want to diminish the opportunity that guys get to, you know, really make a team with that film.
Patriots tight end Hunter Henry joining us here on Jones and Keefe live on day one of the Jimmy Fund Telethon here on WEEI. Hunter, what have you seen thus far through camp? We haven't got to see him yet in a preseason game. We saw him a little bit in a joint practice setting when we were at the joint practice against the Commanders. What have you seen out of Steph Diggs thus far in year one in New England?
Just, man, obviously a guy that has played a long time in this league and had a lot of success at a high level. You know, won a lot of football games, had a lot of, you know, big-time plays in this league. Brings a lot of energy to the, you know, that receiver room and to our offense. So it's been fun to go out there and just kind of compete with them on the, you know, on the practice field. I feel like really gelling, coming together. I mean, that's what it's about. You can't turn down those reps that we get to have when we go out there on the field. So he's been a joy to be around, man. Been a lot of fun to pick his brain in a lot of ways. Just, you know, he's seen a lot of football at a high level.
What's been your early impression of Will Campbell? Obviously coming in as the number four pick, there's going to be a lot of high expectations on him. How do you think he's done so far?
Yeah, Will's doing a good job. You know, he's coming to work every single day. Dude's got a locker next to me, so we get to spend a lot of time together, man. Good kid, and you know, I love competing with him. And, you know, he brings the energy of fire to the game that you got to love. You know, excited to continue to watch him improve. You know, he's only going to continue to get better.
How about off the field? What's his personality like? Because I saw a video right after he was drafted. Where he came up here to New England, he's like, man, I didn't know you guys were even going to have trees here around the stadium. So what's his personality like kind of away from the field?
He's pretty laid back, pretty easygoing guy. Obviously from the South, so he's got that southern draw, that deep southern draw from Louisiana. So you know, it's funny. He kind of takes me back to my roots a little bit. It brings me back to kind of, I mean, pretty similar situation. I mean, he's 21 years old. I got in at the league at 21 years old. You know, a high pick, and you know, a long way from home, just a lot of change in your life, you know, off the field. So it can be a lot. And so it's been cool to just be able to, you know, be there for him, build a relationship with him. He's a lot of fun to be around. And just, he's a good guy.
You know, with the return of Josh McDaniels, have you found yourself also having like a lot of guys sort of come to you as somebody who was in the offense back in 2021?
I don't know if there's a lot of guys coming to me, but no, I put my input where I can, but also let the coaches kind of do what they got to do. But just try to, you know, talk through it with guys and just how you can add flair to different things and, you know, how you got to see certain things in the offense. Maybe definitely, you know, playing in it for a year kind of definitely has helped me. Just, you know, it's kind of like riding a bike, you know, obviously picking it back up again, but you got to, you know, go out there and execute it and kind of get the reps. And you got to get the reps with Drake, too. I mean, you know, Drake's asked me some things. Just how I might see it, just how we've done it in the past or how Josh might see it. Just trying to help different guys in that aspect.
You know, it seemed like at least during the training camp practices that we had a chance to go down to, Mike Vrabel was with the offense a lot. And obviously splitting his time, you know, amongst everybody, but it seemed like the majority of his time was spent with the offense. What kind of input did he have there, or was it more just sort of observing what Josh was installing with everybody?
Well, I mean, he's the head coach, so, I mean, he's over everything, man. So, you know, he's going to be involved with us, going to be involved with the defense. So, I mean, I don't know, maybe y'all see it that way, but, I mean, he's pretty balanced in that aspect. But, you know, he brings a great energy to our room and offense. I think the same energy he brings to the defense. So, you know, he also can give a defensive perspective to us in a way to see what a defense is maybe going to do against certain looks or different things so that we can be ready for that.
You mentioned Drake is coming along in year two. You said he's sort of reached out to see some things, or to you rather, to see how you're seeing some things. In what way, in your mind, has he made some strides here in year two?
Oh, man, I just think he's obviously a lot of confidence. Not that he never had that, but just a very confident individual. He's always been very confident. And, I think it's in the leadership, stepping up in that aspect and just leading the guys, kind of keeping guys accountable, you know, telling guys how he sees things, how he, you know, wants things in a way, on the field. So, you know, I think he steps up in a big way like that. It's been fun to see.
Are you guys already focusing your attention on the Raiders, or do you take time first to go over, you know, the last preseason game and what the Giants are going to do?
Yeah, we still got a game to play, man. So we'll play that game. Then we got a ways for the game. First game still.
Are you breaking news? Are you playing in that game? You're going to play in that one?
Who is going to play in that game?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, if I'm healthy, we'll see.
Okay. Patriots tight end Hunter Henry joins us here on Mondays throughout football season on Patriots Mondays. Hunter, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, fellas.
All right, Hunter Henry joining us here. Day one of the Jimmy Fund telethon on WEEI. We are still closing in on $500,000 here on day one. That you can donate toll-free at 877-738-1234 online, jimmyfund.org, and you can text to give any amount at 56512. Just text KCANCER there to donate right now.
Are you ready to dive into the story, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here at WEEI Afternoons on a Thursday afternoon at 3:30. That means it's time for our buddy Tom E. Curran from NBC Sports Boston Tom Curran is brought to you by Drains by James, Eastern Mass's leader in residential and commercial drain cleaning and pipelining at drainsbyjames.com. At Drains by James, they give a poop about your pipes. Tom Curran, what do you give a poop about in this Patriot preseason finale?
You know, maybe getting final eyes on a guy like Javon Baker or my guy Dirty Del Pettis or
Dirty Del.
Marcus Epps, trying to really determine. We're not going to conclude anything that will probably have great relevance in the early portion of games or the designed lineups throughout the season, but we're going to see some depth. But it's just that kind of thing. How polished are they still even down the roster in terms of getting in and out of huddles? And what's their play style? So not a lot. Probably less than I would take out of a joint practice, to be really honest, Andy. And I think that most fans would agree.
Hey, Tom, the second biggest cap hit on this team is Kyle Duggar. And everybody wants to know, what do you do with Kyle Duggar? If he's not going to be starting, do you keep a guy making, you know, has a $15 million cap hit as a backup? What do you think ultimately happens with Kyle Duggar here in the next week?
I imagine they move on from him because, you know, you have the cap space to take the cap hit now. You can trade him and try and see if someone will take on his, I believe, $9 million salary, or if you can offset that salary a little bit and get somebody to give you a draft pick, and maybe they'll take three and you can take six. But to me, you have to cut bait. It's a four-year, $58 million contract. There's a $15 million cap hit this year if he stays on the team. And if you release him, you're going to take $14 million in dead money, but at least you're going to duck the long-term ramifications. So you have the room to admit your mistake now and take the cap hit and move on. Why is he a mistake? I don't know. I don't think he's a horrible player. He's certainly not a $15 million player. There are a lot of panic buys perpetrated by Elliott Wolf last year when he realized nobody wanted to come here as a free agent, and they had a oodles of guys who were coming up with contracts. So they said, let's just vomit this money out on all these players. And by and large, they were stupid moves.
Tom, what about the offensive line? Do you think we'll get a peek into what the starting five might be by the end of tonight's game? Because I can only see two, maybe three spots that are definites with Campbell, probably Moses, and Onwenu. I don't know who's starting at center, and left guard is, your guess, probably as good as mine?
Yeah, I really think that Bradbury will be the starter at center and Wilson will be the starter at left guard. I think last week was much more about trying to establish position versatility with those guys. Wilson had a little bit of an injury, nothing radical, but I think they wanted to give him a minute to rest and also give Ben Brown a chance to play out there to build his versatility. That's their intention is, I believe the five are kind of set. Campbell, Wilson, Bradbury, Onwenu, Moses. So I'm in a different camp. I did not look at last week. And you know, I did talk to people around the team indicating that this was not a refutation of anybody's abilities. It was more, let's get some looks at these guys in spots that they might be asked to play in.
Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston, with us here on WEEI Afternoons. Tom, I probably buried the lead. What are we expecting in terms of playtime tonight? Are we going to see some starters? Are we going to see Drake May? What are you expecting?
No, I don't think you're going to see any of those guys. Nah. The indications that I've gotten and Phil has gotten are that you ain't going to see none of them. And they put together a practice earlier this week that kind of indicated that, not just with the intensity of the 11-on-11 practice, but the end of practice gassers and everything else that they went through kind of showed that that's the direction that they were headed.
Tom, it's not the sexiest question, but I'm curious who backs up Robert Spillane. I mean, look at it. It's Marte Mapu right now is the guy that backs up Robert Spillane. Is that really, the guy that played free safety last year for this team is now going to be the backup to the middle linebacker?
I don't even know if Marte Mapu is going to make the team. I haven't seen him do dink.
Yeah.
In 3 years. I really haven't. I don't know who the backup to Robert Spillane is necessarily. I mean, Jelani Tavai, he hasn't practiced all through camp after an OTA injury. The linebacker crew is one that I have kind of spent little time on myself because it's so non-existent. You know, you get a million secondary guys and you have guys up front, but between Spillane and the other fella, Bennett?
Ellis.
Andy, help me.
Ellis. Christian Ellis. Christian
Ellis. Ellis. Gibbons.
Excuse me. Christian Ellis. And then the free agent that they signed, they used to put Gibbons. That's it. That's all the linebackers. But yeah. they're not a linebacker-driven team, Ted. So that's not a sexy question, and I kept my my bloomers on for that entire question.
Sorry, bud.
So, Tom, the specialists, I know you're not a fan of young kickers, rookie kickers. You like old kickers. Looks like Parker Romo may be emerging as the favorite to win the job. Do you think tonight we get a chance? I mean, this is kind of what we're watching for tonight, right?
Yeah, 100%. It's a guy who you will rely upon to put points on the board from 40 yards out. You know, say your drive stalls at the 40, you need points. It's a 57-yard field goal. Can Parker Romo make it? I saw him do it this preseason. Can Borgalis make it? I did not see him do it last week. He knocked it into the lumberyard. So, to me, it's an important thing. And he spent a draft pick on it. You know, as bad as Elliot Wolf is and has been, and will continue to be until further notice, the long snapper slash kicker in this year's draft was not a stroke of genius either. But I do look at this, you know, they're going to, if they end up releasing Baker, whatever ends up happening with Polk, who we now know is not going to play this year, and the rest of the draft picks, and then draft picks like that this year with the kicker, it's just, how do you duck the blame if you're Elliot Wolf? How do you dodge having someone come to you and say, it's all right, man, everybody blows $40 million on players? I don't get it.
Speaking of ways maybe Elliot Wolf could dodge the blame, I think the most obvious way is Drake May becomes top five quarterback, top eight quarterback, his third overall pick from a year ago. But there's been, I heard Phil Perry on your station say, well, there's been some regression at times, threw that word out there, throughout the ebbs and flows of the summer. As we approach regular season football, how are you feeling about Drake May and where his trajectory is going?
I feel fine, honestly. I think any regression you're seeing is perhaps a regression in performance because more is being put on his plate. It's like taking a course as a semester begins. You start with the easy stuff that you already know, and then you start to move into things that are a little more difficult, and your opponents might do things that are a little more difficult. To me, I'm not seeing a kid who's just turning in a paper with no answers on it. He's got some wrong answers, but I don't think it's a 50. You know, he goes to Minnesota, goes against a very difficult defense, and shows poise, knows where the ball is supposed to go, and then the game comes, and he throws high twice. And throwing high twice, and I'm not blaming Phil, nor am I blaming Greg Bedard, who, you know, said that at this point he would prefer Orlando Woolridge and his, you know, mechanics to Drake May. Like, come on, can we relax a little bit? I know it's been.
I was like, who the hell is Orlando Woolridge?
You don't know who Orlando Woolridge is?
No, should I? Should I? Is that a real person?
Yes. Oh. He was a Bull, Chicago Bull. Might have been a Piston, too.
Okay, that was a long time ago.
He went to UCLA. Listen, but how can people be unable to strap in for the normal cycle of a 22-year-old quarterback who's got a boatload of physical talent that is sometimes going to be experimented with? And again, high throws suck. Picks to Alex Austin at the end of an inter-squad scrimmage suck. And stupid decisions to fumble at the beginning of a preseason game suck. But I just, we got to stop opening the oven and seeing if the cake's done. Just give it a little time, for God's sake. This idea, and Greg Bedard had said it, and Greg watches closely. I respect his opinion. I respect his willingness to give many opinions. But the notion that his fundamentals haven't improved one iota compared to the stuff that we were seeing at North Carolina or last year at the beginning of camp when Alex Van Pelt basically stripped him down to nothing and made him work on every single thing, I'm not seeing a guy who's throwing off platform with his pee-pee heading towards the target at every time and trying to throw off platform every chance he gets. I'm looking at a guy who looks like a high-level NFL quarterback who occasionally gets a little wild and does some silly things.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Let that cake bake a little bit. All right. Something that I think is pretty much a sure bet is Travion Henderson. What What could you potentially see him? How would you see him being used? What do you think, you know, his ceiling is for this team this year?
It's really interesting on usage, Ted. You're probably not going to see him have a 1,200-yard rushing season or anything like that, just because I don't think that would be a smart idea to use him that extensively where he's getting the ball. 300 carry backs just don't really exist anymore. I would imagine you don't want to give it to him more than 200, really, either. Would you guys agree with that?
Yep.
Yes.
At this juncture, mm-hmm. have three backs?
150 with, 50 catches out of the backfield or 40 catches. You know?
Perfect. But I would expect him to be the most dynamic of the three running backs. But that's not to say the other two guys aren't good. Antonio Gibson, I think, really showed last year, in his first year with the team, that he was a good and useful player. And I would imagine that he can continue to do that. And there is a skill set that Ramondre Stevenson brings, while he also brings some faults and foibles. There's a skill set that he brings that the other two can't. I mean, he just is a punishing guy, Ted. I mean, you wouldn't have liked to have tackled him.
Nope, no thanks.
You wouldn't have minded tackling Travion Henderson. You wouldn't have minded, you know, going up against Antonio Gibson. But eventually you would have said, friggin' Stevenson has it. Here we go. Boom.
Yep.
We wouldn't have loved it.
So, Tom, it looks like the legend of Efton Chisholm is trending towards making the team, which makes that one hell of a camp story and, you know, gives Josh probably another one of those little shifty slot guys that he loves to integrate in the offense. What do you think is going to happen to Kendrick Bourne?
It's really hard. You could either, you know, put him on IR, which I don't think his injury would rise to that level. It didn't seem that dire. You can release him and then put him out there, or you can just wait for him to get better. And my guess is the absence of Folk now officially doesn't weigh into it that much, but maybe the injury to not only to Chisholm, who left with a foot injury and has kind of been last week, it appeared, and has kind of been had his reps measured this week, if any he took, and Kyle Williams being in concussion protocol, might necessitate them making sure that Bourne sticks around because he's not useless. He's just getting to a point where the younger guys should be boxing him out. And, you know, 2 weeks ago, Baker looked fine after going one catch on seven attempts, having a false start, and stopping a route in the back of the end zone. He's back kind of where he was. Not entirely, but he took steps back last week.
Tom, real quick before we let you go, there's been a lot of chatter about potential trades. Do you think we will get any trades, and could any of them be eyebrow-raising?
I think Jennings would be the number one trade likelihood because he's a friggin' good player, and it's a shame he's not going to be here because he's good, and he's not bad. He's good. So I think this would be bad.
Mm-hmm.
He would be the most likely guy, and he has a very manageable contract as well. I think it's like $1.8 million, $5 million cap hit. So they're going to carry about $2 million in dead money from him. But they can move him, and he's useful. That would be ideal for a player-to-player swap, which I think the Patriots should be looking for right now in terms of maybe wide receiver depth or offensive line depth, or even a straight pass rusher. If you got one on the, if you got one back there in the back room, we could use one of those.
All right. He's Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston. Enjoy the preseason finale, and we'll talk to you next week after the roster is set.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
See you, Tom. Thanks.
Tom.
Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we will react to a couple of those little tidbits that Tom Curran dropped on us here. That's up next.
New England Patriots audio on this show today brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market. Go shopping, get rewarded, and brought to you by FindMassMoney.gov. And that is Mike Vrabel yesterday. Not so happy when it comes to those who may be leaking information, in this case, information about Jalen Polk. But the guy is going to have to lay out a giant hunk of cheese down there, Curtis, and see if you can draw the rats out.
I love the old stories where, I don't know whether who the coach was, whether it was Belichick, Parcells, or one of the old school Jimmy Johnson, that they would put up a fake draft chart.
Yeah.
And then, depending on who said what to who, they knew that they were leaking information and they would be gone.
Yeah.
So maybe they can do something like that.
I mean, who is in the organization? Who is left that would be working against him. Or
not many people. That's why I think that it's probably very easy for Mike Vrabel to figure out who did it. Like, I'm on Greg's side. Like, I thought the same thing when Greg brought up Elliot Wolf this morning. It just seems like maybe the two of them aren't on the same page. Elliot Wolf's been getting a lot of heat recently. It would make sense.
But I don't. So I don't think it makes quite as much sense just because Elliot Wolf would be at least in the room around the phone calls that would be being made to try and trade Jalen Polk. So he would basically be hurting himself by hurting the team by trying to hinder trades away.
Yeah.
So to me, it screams a lower level coach that got sweet talked by Jordan Schultz into saying something and now is going to be either reprimanded or feels like an idiot.
I would say that the Elliot Wolf makes sense because my guess is nobody was biting on the trade because he was not traded and he's about to be cut, which would be a horrific stain on his resume.
Correct.
As an executive.
Correct.
So instead of being cut, he can say, well, he didn't play well this this camp,
right?
So we couldn't trade him.
It's
not because he's bad.
It's because of the shoulder.
It's because of his shoulder.
It's not a bad draft pick by me. It's because of the shoulder.
We didn't find this out a week ago when, according to several teams, that the Patriots were taking calls on Duggar and Polk and these guys. And now you're heading into the final preseason game and you're not going to see him.
Yeah.
And that's because they're saying he's hurt and that's what they did.
Curtis, I think you're relatively right, but do you think there's also then a chance that Vrabel is kind of playing us, that he is very aware that that was their plan and he's kind of just saying to the media, oh yeah, we got to find the rats in here?
No,
yeah, that's leaking stories. That was not.
He sounded pissed.
Sound like he was playing along there? Like he was like funning? No, he sounded pissed off yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, but if you're a good actor,
Monday? Huh?
What? Should we bring traps on Monday?
We should bring cheese. I mean, I think we should bring Mike. We will be talking with Mike Vrabel on the show Monday morning from Gillette Stadium.
Sorry, Sean.
We get mic'd up Mondays underway, and we will. I would assume that's going to be early, Curtis, in the show on Monday morning.
6:30 usually,
bright and early. Okay. All right. Wiggy's off today. We got leads left, a bunch of those this morning, including one right now from Curtis. Hello, Curtis.
Good morning, Greg. So two of my favorite people got together in North Carolina yesterday, and I am just so happy that Ben Volen and Bill Belichick got to sit down and commiserate. And we all, I think, take these in the wrong directions, like, because it's like Belichick versus Kraft or Kraft versus this. To me, neither of them have done anything that makes them look better. And they would both be served in changing their approaches. Because if you're Bill Belichick and you're at North Carolina and your goal is to return to the NFL, this doesn't help. Bitching about the owner and the owner's son when your two kids are on your staff is pretty pathetic. And I agree. Kraft did a million things wrong. I think that Kraft did you dirty with the Dynasty docuseries. That would have enraged me. Kraft did you dirty by going on with Charlemagne the God the second his team was going down the toilet saying he fired you instead of saying what he said at the presser, which was a mutual parting of the ways. I am totally empathetic to all the anger that Bill Belichick justifiably feels towards Robert Kraft. However, Robert Kraft gave him the opportunity to come here. Robert Kraft stood by his side during Spygate. Robert Kraft tolerated a decade without a Super Bowl with the greatest quarterback of all time. And he tolerated the end in 2017 when you coughed up a Super Bowl for a non-football reason. So when Bill Belichick tells Ben Volen that they won early because there were fewer people involved, my follow-up to Bill would have been, in 2017, why didn't you win, Bill? It had nothing to do with Jonathan or Dan or Josh or any of the Krafts. It had to do with you allowing something to become personal. The only person within the Holy Trinity of the Patriots that truly prioritized winning above all else was the quarterback. To the demise of his marriage, to the demise of personal relationships, Kraft and Belichick has been showing us all that it was so much more about settling petty scores than it was about winning football games.
Classless.
Wait a minute. You don't think Bill Belichick prioritized winning over everything else?
When Super Bowl 52.
I need a full explanation on what happened there.
You don't prioritize winning above all else when you hire Joe Judge and Matt Patricia to be your offensive coordinators?
Well, now we're talking about the end days. The end days were difficult for Bill.
I just gave you pretty good examples back to back.
So Curtis is discussing the fact that among the things that Bill said to Ben Volen was that he was enjoying coaching now at the University of North Carolina because he didn't have to deal with there was no owner and there was no owner's son.
Right.
I'm assuming that he is speaking specifically of somebody in the Patriots organization.
Yes, I would say it's that rhymes with Jonathan. And but the other thing is just something we've talked about. Like, there is no statue. Like, that's not
happening.
Not a chance in France.
There is a better chance of Wiggy getting a statue than there is of Bill Belichick.
It was. I mean, that's the final nail in the coffin. Oh, there's just no shot, which is terrible. And now they're both at fault because I think Bill using his platform to continue the fight instead of, like, there was no reason to kind of bring the Crafts into it at that point.
Right. And if you're happy where you are, you don't do
exactly.
That is the sign of someone that is scorned.
I do think he's happy where he is. I just think that he takes this opportunity to throw a shot when he can. Like, which is petty, but
both sides do.
Yes, of course.
Both sides continue to, and Curtis is spot on. Like, why? You know, like, why? Like, just move on.
Right.
I mean, just get past it. It's years ago now.
Right. Like, do you think part of the deal from Volen to get the exclusive was that he wouldn't ask about the PR girlfriend?
Jordan?
Is there was nothing about her.
Nothing.
In it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'll get past that.
Right. I wish I could.
Was Jordan there for the interview?
It doesn't say. Okay. I don't know. Maybe that's coming tomorrow. I heard Ben Volen and Jordan had lunch at Bojangles.
I'm not talking about this.
It is crazy that she allowed Ben Volen an interview.
Right.
Because I do think she signs off on who gets to speak to Bill now.
Is she still signing off on things?
I believe she is.
Does she do it in crayon? Okay. Yeah. I mean, it seems weird to me that she is still involved in the entire process. I guess that's love.
Right. Yeah. Another sign that winning isn't the most important thing.
That's true love right there.
Amen.
It's like going to Morgan Wallen at Gillette Stadium when he goes on at 9:45 or whatever time tonight. That's also true love. That's what I'm doing this evening.
I bet you're going to have a blast.
All the way out to Gillette.
The traffic getting out of there is going to be so much fun.
Could the guy go on at like a reasonable time of the evening? I mean, I get it. I'm an old man, but 9:10, 9:30, something like that? My God. I won't be back in the city until midnight or something like that.
That is true.
I'm going to fall asleep on the way home for crying out loud. This is Marty from Key Largo. Hello, Marty.
Hey, guys. You know, I try and call you once a year to just say thank you for everything you do. Last week, I had a heart procedure. I was listening to you guys on my AirPods during the whole thing.
Oh.
You guys really take care of me. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. And last night was absolutely awesome to see Roman Anthony hit that home run.
Yeah.
It's great. Thank you so much.
Everything okay? A-okay with the ticker, Marty?
Hey, night and day, man. Okay. It's amazing what they can do with medicine now.
Okay. Oh, that's amazing.
It's absolutely amazing.
Did you listen to Wiggy when you saw a light?
No.
Did they give you...
Just thank you guys so much.
Did they give you, like, the heart of an orangutan or something? Isn't that what they do?
They just stuck a tube in my heart. That's it.
Okay. Well,
glad
Marty,
you're doing well.
Marty, we're glad to have you around. All right, when we come back... lead from Courtney and a lead from yours truly on the Friday Greg Hill Show at WEEI.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
WEEI Afternoons, Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, Ted Johnson talking a little Patriots football as we get back at Sports Talk following up the Jimmy Fund Telethon. Thank you again for your generous donations over the Monday and Tuesday affair. $5.7 million Record-setting, impactful for Dana-Farber. Awesome.
You were nervous we weren't going to get to 4 million.
I was.
With about, I don't know, an hour and a half, 2 hours before the show ended yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't sure, you know, and then all of a sudden
You doubted our listeners.
Well, the momentum took off and people jumped on board, and it was like, you know, one of those old commercials. I don't remember, like the guys running down the road and then a couple kids follow and all of a sudden the whole neighborhood, like Rocky,
man. Yeah,
that's what that felt like is, you know, Rob Hale and some of those people kind of got the ball moving. They were running down the streets and then everybody just piled out of their houses
love
to join.
I'd love to train just one day, start running down the street and people just inspired by my running. So they join me.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it around here.
Get out of the road, jackass. Trying to drive here. Your career ended 20 years ago. What the hell are you doing?
Like, I feel like that would go really poorly for you.
Probably. And he says radio is dead.
But we're talking Drake May because we kind of didn't have a chance to react to the preseason game on Saturday, then a couple practices. And as Dan Ball puts in our rundown, Patriots offense continues to string bad performances together, Fitzy. How you feel about that description? How do you feel about that description?
I didn't find that seems a little harsh, considering that there were some significant positives to come out of Saturday's effort, like Travion Henderson, 4 carries, 20 yards, and a touchdown, one in which he sheds would-be tacklers and motors his way into the end zone. Obviously, the Efton Chisholm performance as well. Drake May wasn't on his ass 4 or 5 times. Now, granted, he didn't even play a full half, but the offensive line wasn't as bad. As they seem to not practice well, but they've been a little bit better in the games. Now, I'm not sure how much of that is them going against ones or twos or threes. Will Campbell, your boy, looking pretty good out there. 17 snaps, no sacks. Looks great blocking in the run game. So I wouldn't say stringing together a bad performance. It wasn't spectacular. As far as Ted's question, though, about depth, have we seen any other, like, playmakers emerge? Has anyone else grabbed hold of the, I'm going to be someone you can look forward to both on the field and in the stat box this season? Because I haven't seen anybody aside from...
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Just Henderson and Chisholm are the two eye-openers thus far.
I think Matt Collins is... I was a fan of Matt Collins because of his production in the red zone.
Yeah.
You see, he's a big target, right? I mean, he had 31 catches last year. 31. And 5 of them went for touchdowns. I think he's going to be an asset, particularly on third down. In the red zone.
Another name I would throw out there that has been inconsistent, and some of the inconsistency I think is because of the quarterback, Pop Douglas at times has looked like he might have playmaking potential, run after catch potential, and then you look at the game, and he was wide open, and Mac airballed him. It deflects off his hands. It should have been picked. That's a potential chunk play that, you know, could snowball for the positive that never happened.
Do you know how many times he overthrows?
Yeah, a lot.
You know, Douglas is not very big either.
No, he isn't.
There's something about, if you're going to throw to him intermediate, it's like, okay, he's not the biggest target. That's all. You're asking Drake May to throw over big guys and, you know, over linebackers, but in front of safeties to a guy that isn't that big, you know,
That's the job.
I get it, but it's not, his profile doesn't fit. He needs more routes. Like, to me, Efton Chisholm, all he does is crossing routes. They're like 4 yards deep.
Yep.
It's the easiest throw in the world. And it doesn't matter if you're 5'4", you can still complete them.
And I did
But Andy, last year, I'm sorry to jump on this, like, this is the classic coming for me, but like last year, Justin Herbert, also a very large quarterback, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Very, very tall person. Ladd McConkey is a whisker taller than Pop Douglas. Didn't have trouble finding him about, I don't know, 90 times last year.
I think he has a better reach, though. He's got better. He's got a bigger
wingspan
and whatever. You know, just his arms are longer.
Catch radius. Yeah.
Catch radius.
I also think, for me personally, Drake didn't throw the ball well the other day. There were completions that I thought were high. There was even Mac Hollins was wide open on the sideline, and he made Mac Hollins make a ridiculous toe-tapping catch when he should have just been, like, standing there and catch the ball.
Was the play where he actually had it was
the backside,
sort of a busted cover. Yeah. Kyle Williams on the backside.
I'm just talking about the throw, though. Like, made it the guy's wide open. Don't make it that hard. Yeah. Hit guys in the hands. Hit them. I think even Pop Douglas referenced what you're referencing, said, like, it was outside of my frame. Like, give me a chance to make the catch kind of thing. Keep it in, because Pop Douglas can't do anything about his frame, right? He is who he is. His arms are as long as they are. His body, his that ability. So it is a little bit on Drake to give him a chance, especially if that's going to be a volume target. You guys better clear that up. Otherwise, you may have some concerns. 617-779-7937. A lot of Drake May phone calls. Let's go to the lines now. Let's go to Mike in Hanover. What's up, Mike?
Yeah, hey, guys. I am just saying that I'm not, you know, denying he's had some ups and downs, right? But Drake May's 22, and shouldn't we have a little more patience with him?
I mean, we can. He's also the second-year franchise quarterback of the New England Patriots who, I'd ask you, let me flip that question around. In 2 years when he's only 24, should the Patriots be like, well, we don't want to give you $500 million. You're only 24. We don't feel like you're mature enough for the money, right? Like, he is who he is. Age aside, he's in his second season as the third overall pick and the franchise quarterback for the New England Patriots. The job comes with responsibility and criticism mm-hmm. and pressure and all those things. So I get what he's trying to say, especially compared to Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix and those guys, Penix, who had all those reps in college.
Yep, they played 500 more games than Drake May did in college,
but
though.
But that's not the way it works. When you get to the NFL, you're a high draft pick. Nobody they're going to play you, right, anymore. And they expect you to do the job. Mm-hmm. If not the first year, then definitely the second year. He's in his second year.
I gave him all the breaks in the world last year because of age and other things. Didn't have the right coaching, that kind of thing. And so this year, no mas, no more.
Right. It's about bottom line production. And I think your guy, Vrabel, is about that. We've seen that very clearly. The first game, talking about the fumble, like he just kind of tells it like it is with Drake and the expectations. And he's not pampering him, no. Right? He's not treating him like he's only 22. So I get, no, he's treating him like he's his quarterback. Because as he said, the quarterback doesn't get days off. The quarterback's the leader, the face of the football team. 617-779-7937. Let's go back to the phone lines. Our buddy Joe in Randolph. What's up, Joe?
Yes, howdy, boys. I've got a little concern about May. It seems that he doesn't do really well under pressure. And I think he's reminding me more of Drew Bledsoe than Tom Brady this year. And I recall that when Mac Jones came here, he was pretty darn good. He was highly touted. He brought the team to the playoffs in his first season here, and then the Patriots destroyed him. And now my concern is the Pats are going to do the same thing to May.
Thanks for the call, Joe. I think it's a little early in year two to be jumping to any conclusions, good or bad, with whatever Drake May is doing or isn't. We haven't played a game yet. He hasn't played, as Fitzy noted, played a game yet against ones. Like, I can tell you, Fitzy, why they are practicing worse than they play. Because in practice, Washington, New England, and Minnesota, they were going against ones. Will Campbell's going against Harold Landry and Milton Williams and those guys. Those are called ones. When they get to the game field, they're going against twos.
Twos and threes.
Twos and threes. Very simple.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would say with Drew, you know what? It was visible how much the hitting got to him. I mean, off the back foot, patting the ball. There was clear physical signs that I think the hits took their toll. I don't see that from Drake May. I don't see him bailing out. I don't see him ducking like I used to see Eli Manning in the last 5 years of his career because he was getting hit. I don't see that. But I will say this. I think you can ruin a young quarterback. I think Andrew Luck got ruined by a bad offensive line. Hell, he quit the game.
Right.
David Carr was run out of football because the Texans gave up 72 sacks his rookie year. And you know what? When you get hit that many times early in your career, you're never going to be the same. So that is something to consider. I don't think we're even close to there yet, but that is something that fans should be concerned with.
And Fitzy, the good news is the bulk of the quote-unquote sacks that he's dealt with this August are fake. They are tap-off sacks.
They're faux sacks. Right. Yes,
but you know, I look at Andrew Callahan, 16 of 25 with 6 sacks. We seem to be very close to trending toward 1 out of every 4 pass plays is a sack. And that
okay,
is
so let's say, Andy, in the real world, let's say when the pads come on September 7th, let's say half of those simulated sacks actually turn into sacks.
Simulated sacks made me laugh.
Yeah, if he's sacked 3-4 times a game, that's terrible.
Oh, yeah. Four That's times like a game soup, would like be awful. Over 70. Sacks, right? 70
yeah,
sacks.
Yeah, four sacks a game would be 68. So,
so you're talking about a historic number that you'd be getting up to. My guess would be, based on last year when he dealt with a head injury and a couple other nicks, he doesn't get to 68 sacks because at four sacks a game, he doesn't last long enough to play a full 17.
And it's going
to
be do your Dobbs, and boy, oh boy, won't that be fun.
And that falls in line with a separate issue that Ted has talked about, the backup quarterback, the depth in general, the backups, which is a concern.
Can I tell you about one? Can I tell you one thing I think sure. Greg May's looking good doing? One thing. Can you think of what that might be that he's done? Think about the Travion Henderson runs. There was a 3rd and 10 in there.
Yeah.
Check to a draw.
Oh, yes, oh, yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
Taking
with his
the profit.
Head.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The old head.
Yep.
The smats.
Yep. So he sees two safeties deep, you know, check. You know, let's get a draw in here and let 32 go to work. So he has made some calls at the line of scrimmage that I didn't see him hardly make any audibles last year. He's already making audibles, which I know doesn't really, it's not going to blow your skirt up, but those are little wins. Those are signs of progression. From at least in this offense, when you see Drake May do that.
And a lot of the real offense hardos, quarterback hardos, will tell you getting out of the wrong play and into the right play are as big as anything a quarterback can do.
No doubt.
I would also say for a guy who, even you have said this, Ted, like Drake May right now is known for his physical traits, right? The physical things he can do. And if you're saying the best thing he's done over the last week, 2 weeks, is with his brain, that's probably a good evolution that Josh McDaniels is leading. Now, the other stuff has to be fixed. Like, bad decisions have to change. High throws. Like, a high throw over the middle in the NFL, in any level of football, is about as... That's going to be turnovers. That's losing football.
Drake May overshot Mac Hollins and Tavier Thomas. Nearly had the interception. 2nd and 10, you were saying?
Yeah, and that's the other thing. He's had a couple Nair interceptions that dramatically change narratives this time of year. Because people just look at the stat sheet and say, oh, he only played two series and he threw a pick. Oh, he only threw two more series and he threw a pick. So that's part of it, too. He's avoided sort of fortuitously piling up the turnovers there. But I honestly, so I, you know, I'm taking heat on social media, Brian tells me, for my three-point stance, pushing the panic button on the Red Sox.
Yeah.
I'm not panicking on Drake May. Not even close to panicking. Is this summer going the way I would have liked it or drawn it up? No, I can't say that either. And a big part of that is the offensive line. Like, it's not even on Drake May. The sacks are on the offensive line. I don't think he's doing the Tim Tebow sacks where it's pat the ball, pat, oh my God, I don't know where I'm supposed to throw. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to run around, sack now. Most of his pressures and sacks are like, guy right off the edge, guy one move inside the tackle, guy one move up the middle. So that's not really on him. And I know people don't want to hear that. I know people don't want to hear that because you've already taken some heat on the text line for excuses and year one and different things for Drake May. But the reality is the reality. The pressure isn't all about him and his eyes. It's about the guys in front of him and what the hell they're doing. And that is where I'm consistent. Whatever I said, they're worse than last year. Phil Perry says they're atrocious. The offensive line. That is a fatal flaw. That feels like that could be a fatal flaw for Drake May and this football team. And I feel like, Ted, you're starting to trend in that direction.
Yeah, I don't think they're as bad as they were last year. That's where you and I diverge.
But is it a fatal flaw? Could it derail everything else? Are you worried it's that bad?
I am not worried it's that bad, but a bad offensive line will derail you. It's what derailed them last year. It's what I said would derail them last year. It's what did. The offensive line... Having a bad offensive line, it will F up your entire season, right? It just will – it's what's going to ruin the whole thing. And so if the offensive line is worse than last year, boys, this isn't going to be a fun season.
And if it is – does that affect the defense? Like if they see an offense that, oh, the first series that we had an incompletion, then we had a sack for 4 yards, now we had a little draw that only got 6 yards back and we're punting, does that have a weighing effect on a defense
as
well?
It sure can. You know what? If you have a defense that knows that you at least, you know, the offense, let's look at the Chiefs last year. The Chiefs offense, they weren't great.
No.
They were not great. Mm-hmm. And they were down the list of, when it comes to points scored and yards per game. But they all the defense went out there and balled because they know they had a quarterback that at any moment, even though they went had four consecutive three and outs, could just in one play turn it all around. And so it raises, you know, if the defense has got to believe in the quarterback, they do. And if the offensive line is so bad that the quarterback is can't function, then yeah, that's gonna eventually like that. You know, when the offense goes, you know, is only, you know, holding the ball for 24 to 26 minutes a game. And so the defense has got to be out there for most of the time. You know, week 6, 7, and 8, you're going to see a defense beat up and a defense getting discouraged.
Another thing that ties into all of that, Fitzy, generally, mm-hmm. is the kicker. And I'm wondering how we feel about the kicking competition, about the latest drafted kicker who had his attempt at a 57-yarder. So Parker Romo hit a 57-yarder, Fitzy, in week mm-hmm. one. We saw Andy Borgalis come on and not even come close
missed
to
by,
the
a little bit more than that much.
Yeah,
a lot.
So are they going to cut a rookie kicker? Because it feels like Romo has been the better kicker. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, why did he drop? Last year he was John Parker Romo. Why did he drop the John?
He wanted to change things up.
Sure. Well, that's working because formally. He did have, I will say, that there was a little bit of an issue because the second Parker Romo nails the 50-plus yard kick, steps out, and then tries to do one of those drop zone kicks, misses the landing zone, and so Minnesota got the ball at the 40. That's not great. That's a big mental mistake.
Hey, it's smart. You change your name. It's like, no, you suck last year. No, that was John Parker Romo. I'm Parker Romo.
I'm just Parker. I'm a different
guy. You look an awful lot like him, though. Yeah, I hear that all the time.
You look like
Scott Parker
Simpson.
Romo right now is going to win this job, Andy, and guess what? They could be on the verge of cutting their third rookie kicker since 2020.
I feel like Borgalis is due for like a hamstring injury in a year on IR or something. I feel like there's a
Foxborough
flu. I don't
think they have a problem with letting, you know, not – a lot of teams don't feel comfortable with rookie kickers anyway.
Yeah. Remember Tom Curran told us, the only good kicker is an old kicker, or however he said it.
That would be three kickers since 20 – so every other year, basically, they're on average to drop a kicker.
Yeah. The only one that worked out was Gostkowski way back when. That's been a long time ago. 617-779-7937. Up next, we have some trade rumors or reports with the Patriots. Now, it's not the sexy ones that Fitzy wants to talk about, the McLaurins or the Micah Parsons or even a starting offensive lineman. But Andrew Callahan of the Boston Globe says the Patriots are shopping potentially a couple veteran defenders. We'll talk about that next here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball has what's trending.
Are you ready to dive into the story, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.